following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh, yeah. Welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, and I'm wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. More New Year, I guess, than Christmas. And this is the last show of the year, isn't it? You know, I was going to do a highlight show and kind of cheap out and not do a regular show, but then I figured out it was harder to do the highlight show than it was just to talk at you for half an hour. So so you got me. You got a real show coming at you here. And oh no, who's that? It's the Grinch.
This gorgeous lady. Amazing. Love that so much. I just wish she still had...
Just kidding. That is a clip of Hillary Clinton laughing. Kind of the same thing, I guess. There's a talk show that had Hillary Clinton on it not too long ago either. And I had some fun playing the clips from that laugh when it first aired. But that show is doing their end of the year highlight reel, their end of the year highlight reel. And I figured, oh, I wonder what part of the Hillary Clinton interview they're going to have on it. So I watched, and that's what they opened up with, that laugh. I promise you, that's the very first thing that starts off the clip of their interview with Hillary Clinton is that laugh. Why would you start with that cackle? I wonder if to, like, liberal-minded people, if that's, like, comforting or something like that. You know, like when you hear a wolf howl, right? Now, to other wolves, that howl is probably very comforting. But if you're in the middle of the forest and you hear that howl, I don't know about, I mean, for me, because I'm not a wolf, I start getting worried, right? I'm like, maybe the wolves are hungry and they're going to come and eat me, right? They're going to find me just chewed up by wolves. And so you hear, oh, you get scared, right? Now, it's the same effect that I get when I hear Hillary Clinton laughing, right? I'm like, oh my God, the liberals are going to come and they're going to take all my money, right? I get scared. I get the chill down my spine. But maybe to other liberals, that's comforting, right? Maybe the liberals are like, oh, it's a fellow Democrat. They're going to make work illegal or something. Hey, you know what? I'm going to switch topics real quick because I just thought of something. And I saw the Rise of Skywalker movie. And of all of the Star Wars movies, this has got to be the dumbest one. I mean, The Last Jedi was the previous dumbest one. I think this one's even worse. I mean, I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody, so I'm not going to give out spoilers. But the movie was dumb. And it occurs to me that screenwriters nowadays, or whatever you call the people who are writing these movies, they really think their audience is dumb as hell. When I was a kid and I would watch cartoons, if they had a character on the cartoon that was obviously made to relate to me but didn't have any business to be in that universe, man, that pissed me off. I hated being pandered to. But nowadays it seems like the audiences don't care. I don't know what it is. Have they just come to accept this method of filmmaking? If you look at some of the old comic books, the writing in some of that stuff was great. Now, you might argue that from a modern point of view, the writing was poor because they would speak differently. They would narrate what was happening. But even when they would narrate things, that would seem pretty obvious. Like, oh no, I dropped this, you know, I dropped this object. I need to get it before, you know, the Captain Bad Guy gets it. And they would kind of narrate the action as it was happening. And you could say, well, that isn't natural. The writing on that isn't good. But it is good because you knew what was going on. They had plausible explanations for things. Now, I understand that maybe you could say they didn't trust the art enough to make things clear as possible. I mean, you know, you have people doing things like they trip over something. They go, I tripped. I mean, you would never do that in real life. You would never trip over something and then exclaim aloud exactly what was happening as you were falling. And even as a kid, I thought it was kind of silly how long people took between punches, that they could have whole conversations with the other person. But, I mean, that's like dramatic license, right? I mean, I accept that. Now, sometimes it would be stupid, like, I don't know, somebody would shoot an arrow, and then somebody else would be like, duck, that arrow is about to hit you. And they have this kind of in-between, you know, conversation that they could never actually have within the space of a single event. But if somebody's in a fist fight, I'm going to assume that even though the action on panel is that I can see the individual blows that are being traded, which makes that fight interesting, I'm going to assume that there's more of a fight happening where they're able to have a dialogue with each other and that they're just helping me out as a reader so I don't have to see a full comic book length long fight of every single punch and when everything is being said, right? I hope you understand what I'm saying with that. They're taking dramatic license. When I read the original Spider-Man story, the character building for that, the whole story of the first Spider-Man story is only, it's not even a full comic book. It's like one of the stories in this comic. I think it was called Amazing Fantasy. And it was the last issue of this. So Stan Lee's publisher was like, okay, go ahead and do it. Was that Martin Goodman? His publisher says, okay, go ahead and try this crazy story about a superhero that's based on a spider. And nobody likes spiders, so it's going to be a dud. But, you know, whatever. It's the last issue. Go ahead and try it. And then it was, like, hugely successful, of course. I mean, we're still watching Spider-Man movies today and Spider-Man comics. Well, the character building of the original characters in Spider-Man was only a few panels long. It was... But I remember it. It was that impactful. Now, I've read it like two or three times, but I'm not one of these people who've read the story like 1,000 times, and every time they come with a new format, I read it again. I've only read it a few times, actually. But I remember a scene of Peter Parker is in the kitchen, and they're like, hey, you want some wheat cakes? Right? Aunt May's like making them wheat cakes. You know, remember, take your coat or you'll catch cold or something like that. There's another scene where Uncle Ben is like feeling his arm and is like, I think it's the same panel as the wheat cakes. I think it's the same damn panel. And he's feeling his arm and he's like, oh, he's, you know, he's getting strong. And they give him a microscope and he's so happy. And Peter Parker says he's looking in the microscope and he's like, you know, because everybody else treats Peter Parker like a piece of crap. So Peter Parker says, I love them so much. The rest of the world could go hang for all I care, but I'm going to take care of Aunt May and Uncle Ben. I'm going to make sure I take good care of them. And in just a few panels, they set up the relationship between Peter Parker and his Aunt May and Uncle Ben so well that you really feel the impact when Uncle Ben dies. And you see how much it affects Peter Parker when it turns out that it's his fault that Uncle Ben died. The succinctness of this, it's really genius, guys. The writing, it's impressive how good these guys were at their craft so long ago. Now, let's contrast that with the 90s and Image Comics. Now, I don't know if you guys know what this is. This is when they took the idea of what comic books were, and they just distilled them into ridiculousness. Everybody was strong. Everyone was posing all the time. The dialogue was insipid. they would take the cool parts of a comic, but the and they would cut them out and they would paste them. But when I say the cool parts, I mean the cool parts where if you read a good comic, it built up to. Whereas the Image comics, they would just take this unearned stuff and people were cool just because they said that they were cool. They didn't actually do anything. So look, guys, if you saw Spider-Man, Captain America, and I don't know, what's another good superhero that and Thor, okay, or Silver Surfer, and oh, there's so many of these Marvel people, and you saw them standing looking at something that they had just worked through and destroyed, right? And they stopped an Earth-challenging threat. And you see them all standing there posing, looking at the threat after a job well done. It gives you a certain feeling of, wow, these guys are heroes. You know, they really sacrificed. They really went through a lot. And they earned this, right? Now, take that pose. And that's just like a regular panel of an Image comic, right? They're all just standing there like that all the time. It's unearned, and it's hollow, and it's meaningless. But to a little kid, that might be really cool. Oh, they're so cool. But to somebody who has any understanding of story, anyone who's over 12 probably, you're like, why are they standing around? Like, people don't stand like that all the time. You know, it doesn't make sense. There's no scene of Peter Parker just being kind of wimpy, walking to class, standing with his books in his hand, doing nothing. There's no breathe time. It's all action all the time. That's what their movies are nowadays, and specifically Rise of Skywalker. Guys, if you look at the old Star Wars, if you think of even the original Star Wars, which was probably the most classic sort of adventure, thrill ride, summer blockbuster type of a thing, dude, there's a lot of downtime in that movie where they're just talking and nothing is happening. They're just building character. They're relating. You can tell from watching these people how they would act in a certain instance at a certain time. You feel like you know these people. When you watch new movies, it is like phony to me. It's like you ever see a blue screen and you can kind of tell it's a blue screen and like maybe there's a character on a bike and the character looks like they're going through this bike real tough, but you can tell it's someone just sitting in front of a blue screen. It's kind of ironic that I'm saying this because there's a lot of blue screens in Star Wars. But I'm saying from the point of view of the illusion is broken and it's just kind of 2D and flat. Maybe you saw a special on how blue screens work and now you can't unsee it. Now every time you see someone in front of a blue screen, you just picture them in a studio and then some editor threw a background on top of it and it just breaks the illusion for you. That's what Star Wars is to me now. The illusion is gone. It's broken. Disney has taken the Star Wars mythos and just trashed it completely and utterly. And it's so bad. And what's makes me think I'm crazy is that people don't seem to realize it. I see the dumb movie and at the end I'm asking some people, I'm like, what did you think of the movie? They're like, a 7. 7? What the hell did you just watch? I've never seen so much, and I watched Moffat's Doctor Who. I've never seen so many plot holes, so many ridiculous leaps of logic, so many stupid setups and non-payoffs as I've seen in the Disney trilogy, and specifically this last movie. It's so bad. How do these people get paid so much money? And this is something that drives me crazy also. This is like the best of the best. This movie is supposed to rake in over $1 billion, guys. And it's garbage. I can understand how somebody who's a Star Wars fan can watch this and like Star Wars so much that they're kind of blinded by love. And like anything that comes out with the name Star Wars on it, they're going to basically say it's good. But it's not good. It's caca. I'll tell you one scene here. I remember being in the theaters for the original Star Wars and seeing the Millennium Falcon go into hyperspace. And the setup is there. You know that if they get to hyperspace, and again, Star Wars, I actually have seen Star Wars maybe 3 times, maybe 2 times, not that often. Not as often as a lot of fans have watched it, where they're watching like 12 times, 20 times, stuff like that. I've never seen Lord of the Rings. Never seen it. I'm not a huge movie person. But my goodness, I remember it was in a drive-in theater with my parents watching this thing. And they can't get the Millennium Falcon to jump into hyperspace. And the excitement and the suspense of knowing these guys have got to get there or they're going to get blown to smithereens by these oncoming, you know, ships. And then they make it, and or actually, I think it starts to go. It's like, and it putters out, and it doesn't go. And they're fighting to get it to take off. And then finally it goes. And the effect at that time was very impressive. You see, like, the stars kind of turn into these straight lines. And then they come out of hyperspace. And that effect was, you know, is very cool, too. And you felt like you were on a ride. You felt worn out from watching them. You felt emotionally drained from the ordeal that they just went through. It's so good. So now you have a hack crap writer take that scene and go, hyperspace is cool. What can we do to make it more cool? Oh, let's have them hyperspace one after another after another. So there's a scene in the new movie, and it looks cool. It definitely looks cool. And they come out of hyperspace, and they go to one planet, then another planet, then another planet, and they call that hyperspace skipping. And it's in the Millennium Falcon. And they avoid the TIE fighters again that are coming after them. And then at the end, they're like, the Millennium Falcon's not supposed to be able to hyperspace skip. And they're like, well, I'm such a good pilot. I did it. I don't know what the explanation was. If it can't do it, how it did it, whatever. The point is, they took that cool effect and they took that, and they only took the effect. The suspense built up around that effect is nil. It's not there. It's non-existent. So you end up with this memory of going, oh, that was cool. And you kind of remember the effect, but it's not good. Me, I remember the effect because of the situation around it. So they're basically kind of, I don't know, cloning your memory and then compacting and saying, look, this movie is cooler because we took that one effect and we did it like 3 times or 6 times or however many times they did it. But it's nonsensical because not only are the TIE fighters hyperspace skipping right behind them, but they're hyperspace skipping not in space, but like from one planet to another. So like you see a city, then a mountain, then a forest or something like that, right? And it's cheap and it's crappy and there's no suspense to it. I wasn't worried about it. I thought the actual visual was neat, but I, at no point in time was I feeling any sense of suspense or danger for them at all. I knew they were going to be fine. Whereas in the original one, there is tension there. And there's no tension in the movies nowadays for like hardly any of them. Oh my, I could tell you so many scenes, but let me grab another one that's in the trailer so I don't give you any spoilers. Which is, there's... Guys, do you remember the scene in the original movie that opened up Star Wars of this Star Destroyer, I think they're called, and it passes the camera. It opened up the film, and you see this little, it's not a little ship, but you see this ship go by, and then it's like it's shooting, something shooting at it, it's shooting at something, and then after that ship goes by, you see another ship go by. And it's this giant looming ship that goes by the camera and it just seems like it lasts forever. And you get this amazing sense of scale. And again, I don't even know who's in the ships because it's Star Wars. I'd never seen it before. I didn't know any of the characters when I saw it in the movie theater. And I'm seeing, and now I know it's genius directing because you have the first ship is small in relation to the frame to the second ship, the one that's pursuing it, the one that's looming in the background. And this giant ship is going past the camera. And guys, it's amazing. The visual at the time, I mean, if I watch it now, I'd probably be like, oh, that's just a model, you know, probably wouldn't care about it. But back then, the effect was amazing. And I was like, what did they do to bring this thunder down on them, right? It instantly got me interested in this story. And that is impressive. That is an amazing bit of filmmaking. That's iconic filmmaking. So in this new one, oh my God, they take that Star Destroyer and there's 100 of them and it's so ridiculous and it's so stupid and it comes out of the ground. It was hiding on the planet and it comes out of the ground and they're just there floating around the planet. And I want to tell you more. Because it gets way more ridiculous than that. But just realize that there's now like 100 Star Destroyers in frame, probably thousands, maybe tens of thousands. I don't know. It's supposed to be enough to like take over the universe. And you know how they had the Death Star in the original one? And then they had it again in the third movie in Return of the Jedi. Now, when I saw Return of the Jedi, part of me was like, God, they're doing the Death Star again? Back then, when I was a kid, I thought that. But, you know, when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Because you go, well, the Death Star would have worked, except for this one minute, tiny little flaw in the design that only got because of a kid with a Force. And that the chances of that happening are one in a million, right? And so that's why you make a movie about it, because it's so impossible and so incredible. And what an amazing story Star Wars was. Okay, so then you take that moment of the Death Star, and then they recreate the Death Star, which, look, if it was real life and you go one in a million shot, if we just make the Death Star again and just don't give it that, then it's going to be completely bulletproof and impenetrable. And then the thrill in the Return of the Jedi was you knew that if they got the Death Star done again, perfected, without the flaw, and without the plans that they had to have for the first one to even find that flaw, if they don't have that in the next one, for the next one, if this second Death Star gets built, everyone's toast. It's suspenseful. So even though they use the same, you know, deadly weapon a second time, they did it well. These idiots at Disney put another Death Star in the new movie that they come out with. It's not just a Death Star, it's a Death Planet. How dumb can you be? Then in the second Disney movie, they come out with a Death Star cannon that has to be defeated. Then in the third movie, each one of those Star Destroyers that I just talked about, each one of those moron ships has a Death Star cannon capable of blowing up a planet. No suspense, no sense of scale, no skill in writing. Just trash, just garbage. That drive-in movie, I don't know how much it cost if you kind of, you know, did the math on it or something. But the movie that I saw, and I'm cheap, right? I don't get popcorn or nothing. It was nearly $30. It was in 3D. So I could see these actors' giant lack of good script in three dimensions. I know I'm rambling here, but I'm just so mad that these people